carrefour des arts. À la redécouverte du théâtre musical. Une émission proposée par Christophe Mirambeau sur Canal Académie.
Bonjour à tous nos internautes, nous sommes à Broadway, au Bluefin, au coin de la 47e rue et de Broadway. Je suis aujourd'hui en compagnie de Barry Kleinert, compositeur et lyriciste de Broadway, avec lequel je vais m'entretenir un moment en anglais. Hello Mr. Kleinert.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. We are the Bluefin in Broadway and 47th Street.
Yes.
You're a Broadway composer and a Broadway lyricist.
Oui.
So that's why you're my guest. I'm yours because I'm in your town. Sorry for my accent, you know, I'm the son of Maurice Chevalier, and Maurice Chevalier is quite a native when he speaks, which I'm not.
Oh, but you do very well.
So first, I'd like to hear from you some definition of yourself. Do you introduce you?
Okay. I'm originally from Chicago, Illinois, which is another state in America. And I moved to New York almost 30 years ago. And I came here originally to be a director, to do mise en scène. And then I decided that my great passion was to write music and lyrics, you know. So once I made my decision to write music and lyrics, I started getting jobs as a director. This is the perverse nature of show business in New York. So then I thought, I like directing, but I love music and writing for the theater. I really pursued that passion. So I've written several musicals, which I've had performed all over the country. And my songs now are being recorded internationally, which is lovely. And I just had a song recently recorded on the Sony Classical label by baritone Nathan Gunn, who just recorded a song of mine called Time. And it's interesting to hear an operatic baritone sing, you know, your material, because I don't write with a specific legit sound, but it's always interesting to hear how people interpret your material. I love writing for the theater. I love the potential of creating songs for specific characters. And also, it's a great tradition. You know, you have the tradition of opérette and opéra comique, and we have the tradition of the comédie musicale, which is an extension of operetta. Truthfully, we would not have musical comedy if it was not for Offenbach and Hervé. So now I am fascinated by learning your culture, which I find fascinating. I've spent the last 10 years really learning the French operette and comedy musicale traditions and the composers, the compositeurs, and I'm finding there's so much that I admire and so much that is still relevant and wonderfully musical. So I think we can learn something from each other, from each culture. You know, I do. I think there's something to be learned. I think it's important that I think it's important for people like you, Christophe, to come to New York and to see our shows and to see our theater and to listen to our music live. And it is important for us to go overseas and do the same. Because there's so much wonderful music out there. So that's a little bit about me. I continue to write and direct. And I do a lot of cabaret performance in New York. I work with a lot of singers. And it's been interesting. I've been working with a lot of opera singers over the years. And they are the strangest people of all.
Yes, even in France, you know.
I sing everywhere. Opera singers are such strange ways.
I thought actors were strange, but opera singers are truly bizarre. Yeah. So, but it is. I love listening to. Our, I mean, working on our traditions of people like Richard Rodgers and Mark Blitzstein are influences of mine certainly, and also just the power of language. I love writing lyrics. It's very important.
So yes, that's the point. I want to hear with you your song "When," because I think it's like a profession de foi, a faith, something.
Well, it's very interesting how that came to be written. There is a comedian in America. Her name is Kay Ballard. And she's
very famous.
And she's very famous,
even in France.
Oui. And she loves. She has performed in France, I know. And she was doing a show in New York, and she wanted a number to open the second half of the show. It was in two acts, and she asked me to write a song about how things change. And I didn't know what she meant. And she said, "When did I become a member of the establishment?" And that was all she said. And then I went, oh. So I wrote this song called "When," and it was interesting for me to have to get into the head of a woman who at that time was in her 60s, and think about what are the things that she would think about how time has changed and what she has experienced and what had changed in the world that she was not aware of. So. It was very. It's great writing for a personality because you know the person who is going to sing the song, and that makes it actually very easy. I'm sure you've had this experience too. If you know who's going to sing it, you know exactly. You can give them a phrase.
What are their tricks too?
Their tricks. You know that they're going to say. You know just how they're going to say a certain thing, and that's wonderful. So it was a big hit for her, and I just heard that somebody. Sang the song in Australia. I mean, It's just so wild. There's a singer, Judy Canelli, and I don't know if you've ever heard of her. She did Sunset Boulevard in Australia. And I've seen
her on CDs.
Oui. And she just, someone just said, "I just heard your song," and Judy Canelli was doing it in Australia. So these, you never know. When you write a song and you put it out there, you never know where it's going to end up. So I couldn't have predicted that.
So just when...
And my Ovaltine, I keep fondly thinking of when I was part of the artier scene. Nights at the Blue Angel or the Bonsoir. Not that I'm complaining, 'cause I'm still here, though I fear that I've witnessed a crime. The passing of time. When did I join the establishment? When did I stop being bold? When did my agents all get to be 19 years old? When did I last wear a negligee? When did Sinatra have hair? When did this country start caring what Vanna will wear? Things change. Donald Trump finally owns New York City. Styles change. Now the gowns of the 40s seem pretty. Cocaine has replaced marijuana. Monroe is reborn as Madonna, and now people say Cybill Shepherd can act. Is that a fact? Ah, when did the 50s turn fabulous? Then we lived happier days. Or Is it merely a trip time plays? Now we look back on the thrill of Jack Harvey, fun and the good times with Joseph McCarthy. If that could happen again, don't say. When did people stop reading? When did rap replace song? When did taste start receding? When did Michael Jackson start to look so Anglo-Saxon? Things change. Our society still is evolving. Thank God they've made anison faster dissolving. Each day we keep calorie counting, we pay, while the deficit's mounting. And hey, Ma, the whole world still belongs to the men. Isn't it strange how some things still don't change? And when did each business executive find Reeboks go with a suit? When did Koreans discover fruit? When did Tim Rice overshadow Fred Ebb? Or when did Puccini turn into Lloyd Webber? And when did we start gulping vitamins? When did songs stop using rhyme? When did we start spouting phrases like quality time? When did we stop being civilized? When did sane merge with insane? When did they grant secret powers to Shirley MacLaine? Oh, if I could tamper with history, change every day of my life, wait, would I do it all over again? You pick the time and the day and the place. I'll pack my voice and a tube of erase. Whether I win or fall flat on my face, I still revive at the thrill of the chase. Show me that lion's den. Just say when.
Canal Academy in New York with Barry Kleinbort at the Bluefin on Broadway. Barry,
oui.
You have to explain to us, poor Frenchies, what's this songwriting job? Because in America, in Broadway, it's a work, it's a job. Right. It's not like often in France, like a hobby. It's a real work. So just explain what is a songwriter.
Right. Listen, and I will tell you something, Christophe, it is the same all over the world in terms of how people think. People think that writers, you know, write on the back of napkins, you know, serviette and envelope, and they just, you know, they're just writing. But actually, in America, a lot of songs are commissioned. So, in other words, like a singer will say to you, I want a specific kind of a song, and you will write that, and you will be paid to write the song, as opposed to wake up in the morning and say, I need to write this. It is a job. And also writing a show, if somebody commissions you to write a show, then you know you're going to adapt a certain work. You're going to have it done by a certain time. And it is a discipline. Songwriting is a discipline, and it can be learned. But what cannot be learned, and I don't care where you are, is inspiration. How do you take an idea? In other words, like someone says, "I want a song that says I love you." How do you find a new way to say I love you? And you have to kind of turn it around and find a way to make that happen. And I think that's where the discipline comes in, to say, what's a way that I can say this that has not been said before? It's very hard. And that's why a lot of people don't do it. Another song you asked me about was a song called I Get Around. Again, that was written for a specific singer, a wonderful singer by the name of Marcia Lewis, who was nominated for the Tony Award, which is our highest, it's like your Moliere, for revivals of Chicago, musical Chicago. She was the matron, and a revival of the musical Grease. And she was going to open at Carnegie Hall, and she wanted to have a song to open her show. And I looked at her and I said, gee, she travels a lot. She goes all over the world and she's always performing. And so I had an idea for a song, I Get Around. And here's the thing about songwriting. I had a blank piece of paper, which is the is the scariest thing in the world, is to look at a blank sheet of paper. And I wrote two words on the paper. She was born in Ohio, which is a state in America. And I wrote Ohio, and I wrote bio, which is her biography. It's what we call it, a bio, what you put in the program. And I wrote that, and I went away. And the next day, I looked at the two words. I looked at Ohio and bio, and I just started to write. But if I hadn't written those two words, I could not have started the song. So that's every time you think you cannot write, you know, I want you to know that you always think, oh, I'll never be able to do this. I can't do this. And then suddenly something happens and it happens. So that's how I wrote I Get Around, because you had asked me about that song. And I think even if the person you write the song doesn't end up doing it, it's always good as a dramatist to think about who might sing this song. I heard that Stephen Sondheim always said he could not write pop songs because he never knew who was going to sing the song. He always needed a character. So I think you have to create who that character would be. And also, songwriting is about a journey. You always want to believe that you end up someplace differently than where you started. So sometimes, for example, I will write the last line of the song first. And then I will say, how do I get there? But I know the ending of the song. So there, like, for example, Time, which I mentioned with Nathan Gunn, I wrote the last line first. I knew how it was going to end, but I didn't know how it was going to get there. So, but that's a good thing, because then you know where you're going. You just have to figure out how to get there. What are the steps to get there?
Yes, it's like a technique.
Technique. So, another question?
Yes, we have to. Of course, but before a new question, I want to hear this.
I get around.
With Marcia.
Marcia Lewis.
So nice to see you. I just now got back. I came here direct from the station. And goodbye, got no time to unpack. I'm off to my next destination. So thanks for the visit, but don't ask where is it. I'm off to, can't say where I'm bound, 'cause I'm bound to say I get around. Last week in Wichita I was the rage, and last night I conquered Ohio. Playbill just called 'cause they're adding a page to my ever-burgeoning bio. From Scottsdale to Scotland, wherever you spot land, that's where little me can be found. Why, just ask my friends, they'll all say I get around. I travel by train and I travel by plane, and just once in a while parcel post. And nothing is cuter than me on my scooter, just coasting from coast to coast. So charge me to Visa and check in my bags. To travel is my one desire. Hand me a passport and my luggage tags, and add miles to my frequent flyer. Then frisk and inspect me, and oh, it'll detect me. Farewell, I must cover some ground. I'll write without fail. Chris, your check's in the mail. I'm booked on old Jonah's whale. I get a feeling way down that says get out of town, so I'm off in a flash. I'm hither and yon, then I'm here, then I'm gone. It's a life full of dash. From ocean to ocean, I'm always in motion. I've never sat back and relaxed. I've stamped and addressed me and Federal expressed me. And next month, I'm gonna be vaxxed. So thank you for coming. Too bad I can't stay. I hope this won't come as a shocker. Did I hear you say they should lock her away in her little portable locker? From Pittsburgh to Glasgow, how far can this ass go? The answer is still to be found. But ta-ta, I'm late. My agents booked me a date. I'm doing Fiddler in Kuwait. Wait. Like I said, I get around. Why do I do it? Because I love the sound of applause. And if the gig goes just right at the end of the night, well then who knows, I might just get around. I love to get around. Taxi!
So Barry, we've heard I Get Around, and now I like to speak about cuisine. Oui. You know, some cuisine. And the eternal question, okay, is the words are coming first, or is it the music? Because you are one of the rare songwriter who wrote to the right music.
Oui. And that's a very good question. And actually, there's a great story. Cole Porter was asked what he thought about Rodgers and Hammerstein. And he said, I think they're great if you can believe it takes two people to write one song. Because Cole Porter wrote his own music and lyrics. Yeah, I thought that was such a great story. Anyhow, that's a very good question. I think what comes first is not so much the words or the music, but the idea. And what I always try to do is to try to find what is the feel. So even if it's not the tune, the music, it's a kind of a, just what is that feeling that I want? So for example, with a song like When, which you heard, it was about the vamp. It was about that dum, dum, bum, bum, ba-dum. I knew that for K to come out at the top of the second half, it had to be an entrance. And that sounded like entrance music to me. And so then, if I take that vamp, how do I develop that into something musical? So that's a germ, that's an idea, that's just a little thing. The same thing, sometimes a word can tip you off, but I really think they come kind of at the same time. You know, a feeling comes, and then maybe a line comes, and then musically, because you know you try a lot of different things and you go no, that's not the right feeling. So I think it's interesting. I've also, when I write with other people, a lot of times the music will be written first completely and then they will ask me to put a lyric. It's very helpful that I write music so that I can, when I hear the melody, I know where a singer is going to breathe. And I know where a line has to, where the words have to fit on the music. This is very important. Sometimes I will write a lyric first and then the music is set. But I don't like that as much. I actually find that it's better the other way for me, because the lyric will be created off the feeling of the music. So I think a lot of times it starts with something very small musically, then I will develop the words, and then the music will come after that. And sometimes you totally change the tune, but going along with the feeling. There's something great about collaboration. There's something wonderful about not having a collaborator, I have to tell you, about just writing the music and lyrics yourself. Because the important thing is, whether you write with somebody or not, it should always sound like one person. I think the people who we love, the songwriters who we love, are people who it always sounds like one person, one mind, wrote that song, as opposed to two different people. And it's very, very important that the lyricist and the musician see things exactly the same. That one idea between the two people. And so often, I think songs that don't do anything for us are are because of that indecision. You don't feel that they are on the same page. You don't feel the music and the words are living in the same world. And I remember when I collaborated with somebody, we played songs for a producer at Lincoln Center, and he said, "You are so rare in that it sounds like one person wrote it." And he says 98% of the things I hear do not sound like that. So I also think, you know, as we get older, we have very specific ideas about what we want to say, both musically and lyrically. And that's the only good thing about getting older, is that that becomes clearer and more specific. And I also think it's very important, whether you're a writer or a songwriter, or that you have to believe you have something to say. That you have a way of saying it and something to say, because if you don't have anything to say, then ferme la bouche. Do not say anything, because it's about saying to whoever is going to hear something that they've not thought about before. It's very important. You have to believe that.
Do you compose at the piano? Or?
I used to compose on the street. I used to walk down the street and think ideas in my head.
Oh.
I think that's très dangereux, because...
But that's very romantic, I'm sorry.
It is very romantic.
Oh, it's a 19th century...
And I'm going to tell you, there is a song I wrote that is on the Big City Rhythm album that I wrote walking down the streets of Paris. The whole idea came to me while I was walking in Paris. It was actually the Big City Rhythm song. And the whole melody line came to me while I was walking along the Seine. And I don't know why, but it just did. I heard the vamp, and I suddenly heard that, and I said, "That's what I'm going to do." And I didn't bring any writing paper with me, so I didn't write it down until I got back to New York. But I did write it while walking the streets of Paris. So then I like to be at the piano, and I like to figure things out.
So let's try this Big City Rhythm song,
which was written along the Seine.
Yeah. And in the Big City Rhythm album on Arbiga Record,
oui.
The Barry Campbell collection of songs.
Merci.
A beat to this city. Monday to Sunday, it's there. Jazzy and sweet, tough and pretty. But let the buyer beware. Quickly it becomes a part of you, digging deep down to the heart of you, never stopping even after you're gone. Big City Rhythm keeps sounding. Big City Rhythm goes on and on.
Stand very still and you'll hear it rising right up from the street. Whether you'll love it or fear it, you can't escape from that beat. Uptown, downtown, always guiding you, driving, chiding, taunting, riding you, never stopping even while you're asleep. Big City Rhythm keep pounding. That steady rhythm is strong.
Big City Rhythm keeps sounding. That catchy
crazy rhythm. Hypnotic,
chaotic,
keep speeding,
repeating
all night long. I always knew that my future was here. I waited patiently year after year. I waited and waited. Will you look at that skyline? Pleased to meet you, say how do you do? Never knew that your view was so great. Holy cow, that's the Empire State. Will you look at that skyline?
Will you look at that skyline?
Like a present all shiny.
Every day some new sectors arrive.
We've got us
and
a
the
date.
Number is small but
well,
survives.
Looks like the Empire
the
State's
just waiting. It's waiting for you. Feel that ideal syncopation. You can escape from that beat. Uptown, downtown, always guiding you. Driving, chiding, taunting, riding you. Never stopping, even while you're asleep.
Big city rhythm.
Big city rhythm.
That pulsing rhythm.
That beat is strong.
Big city rhythm.
Big city rhythm.
Sounding.
That driving rhythm is tantalizing, energizing. Hypnotizing, compromising, stimulating, aggravating, soul elating, hopes deflating, dream inventing, unrelenting, blues defeating, keeps repeating wrong all night long.
Taxi!
What, next week?
I'm here!
Oh, help!
Taxi!
Closed him down, huh?
Somebody stole my suitcase.
Still Canal Academy in New York with Barry Kleinbord.
Oui.
Dear Barry, we've heard Big City Rhythm song.
Oui.
You told me in our different meeting that you were very influenced by the Mark Blechstein music.
Oui.
So I have to say I love Mark Blechstein, which French doesn't know.
And I want to talk about him because I think it's very. He was a very, very important man, and he does not get the credit for how important he was. He wrote The Cradle Will Rock, and if you ever see the movie that is made, that came out about 8 years ago, where Hank Azaria, I think, plays Mark Blechstein in the movie. He influenced so many writers, and he was a great theater man. He was a man who understood the exploration of character through song. And he influenced Leonard Bernstein.
Yeah,
Bernstein would not have written without Betty Comden and Adolph Green, Frank Lesser. Frank Lesser said that he wrote The Most Happy Fellow because of Mark Blechstein. This guy influenced people because he did something that had never been done before in terms of his writing.
In some way, he was like an American Brecht, if I can say.
Absolutely.
Because of the WPA project.
And that's absolutely true. He met Brecht, and he saw the Three Penny Opera in Germany, and he decided that that was what he wanted to do. But what he did was he refined the technique, he Americanized the technique, and he was a great theater man. He understood what a song was going to do when someone sang it from the stage. His translation of the Three Penny Opera has never been equaled. And when you hear that recording of Mack the Knife, when you hear Bobby Darin or Louis Armstrong or whoever, that is Mark Blitzstein's genius. He made those words fit on the music because he was also a great composer. And I hope they do Regina in Paris sometime, which is his opera of the Little Foxes, yeah, because it is extraordinary. He brings a dimension to the work that does not possess as a play. And I've seen people do that on stage, and it's just extraordinary. And I think people now, it's so interesting about the world. He also was an openly gay composer at a time when you did not do that.
And he was murdered
because of it in Martinique.
Yeah.
Three sailors, he didn't die instantly. They took him to a hospital, and they didn't know who he was, and they did not take care of him. And it's really a tragedy. But he lived his life the way he wanted to. And there were so many writers who are indebted to his genius. You know, there are certain people who never get the acclaim, but who really influenced. If you listen to West Side Story and you listen to Regina, I will tell you this. What is called the Hubbard theme in Regina is the song Maria from West Side Story with one note turned around. And Bernstein just, I'm not saying he stole it, but he so heard it.
Barry, you're just right.
if you play those two things, you cannot believe. You go, oh my gosh, it is. Because one goes da da da, and the other goes da da da. That's it.
So I propose to hear now another Mack Blitzstein shoot,
okay,
with Father Will Rock.
Oh, oui.
Three. Mission. My dear Mrs. Mister.
How are you? It's been weeks I've wanted to meet you and to greet you. I'm a stray lamb too, and I've brought along a monthly present. But one thing's not so pleasant, Father dear. I fear that things cannot continue forever. Hard times, I can assure you. Hard times for us and for you. Hard times, Father, what can we do? Mr. said it's something about bank credits for downright simply answer both yes and no. It's true you've preached so much for peace, but now it seems that peace may be a little expensive. Please don't think me offensive, just restrain your intensive order. You might mention that you do deplore the German side of the war.
Thou shalt not. Righteousness conquers, iniquity perishes, peace is a wonderful thing. But when I say peace, I'm referring to inner peace. Let there be no misconception. The peace you remember, which passeth beyond understanding. We must remember our honor and the valor and pride which is ours to cherish and use. Knowing well that peace without honor, no good American should excuse. Surely I need not remind you of the war, which is simply dreadful for everyone. There we take no side, still we know who defends sweet peace from the savage Hun.
Collection.
But in 1917.
Reverend Salvation! News! Front page news, headline news, strictly mind, confidential news, but such news! Ha! My husband just got back from a conference, and he says it's the only way for us to recoup our profits. It's all fixed, and everything's ready for the first guns! War! War! Huns. War! War! Kill all the dirty Huns! War! War! We're entering the war! For Mr. shown the president how things are. England has simply been a darling. Eyes right, think of the rallies. Eyes left, I'm gonna knit socks. Eyes front, steel's gonna go up sky high. All you clergymen must now prepare a special prayer and do your share.
Thou shalt
war, war, kill all the dirty Huns and those Austro-Hungarians. War, war, we're entering the war.
The Lusitania's an unpaid debt. Remember Troy, remember Lafayette, remember
the Alamo,
remember our womanhood,
remember those innocent unborn babies.
Don't let George do it. You do it.
Make the world safe for democracy. Make the world safe for liberty. Make the world safe for steel and the Mr. Family.
Of course it's peace we're for. This is war to end all war.
Collection.
We are still with Barry Kleinbord at the Bluefin,
oui.
At the corner of the 47th and Broadway.
Oui.
Barry, you're a songwriter,
oui.
A composer, and you don't do just songwriting. You, in matter of fact, just song for special events, etc.
Oui.
You do musicals and. You are actually writing a new musical called Angelina?
I've got about three or four shows that have been done around town. I've done around the country, and Angelina is. And what's interesting, because we've just talked about Blitzstein, which is that he always tried to find projects so that he wasn't pigeonholed as always writing the same thing, and I try to do the same thing. So with Angelina, which is based on, is a modernization of a Greek legend, Phaedra and Hippolytus, I felt that that was something that was so different for me to write, which is verges on opera. and which is something that I'm really beginning to love much more than I ever when I was younger. I really find it so powerful to experience. And Angelina is my attempt at writing, at taking the passions that you would reserve for opera and putting them into musical theater language. But I love writing that size, writing for that kind of size of experience. And so every project that I do is different. This musical was that I did, that I did not do the music for, but I did the words, which the song Time is from, is also a very unusual show, and always trying to find another way to take the musical theater, you know, another path to work on. And people don't know what to do with me. You know, that's another problem, and I don't know if it's a problem in France, but if you write a funny song, then everybody thinks that's what you do. Yeah, he writes funny songs. And then if you write something very serious, they go, oh, he's very serious, so he cannot be funny. And why can't we do it all? Why is it so difficult to be thought of as, I write funny, I write serious, I write romantic, I write operatic? I think that if you're a dramatist, you try to do everything. And, you know, 'twas ever thus. Offenbach, you know, would write for the Bouffe Parisien, and they think, oh, you know, he writes frivolous, and then when he tries to write serious, they go, oh, no, you know, you want to be able to do it all, and you want to be taken seriously for what you do, and that's very hard.
So Angelina is a very
it's a serious work, but I think it's also filled with very romantic music, yeah, and very tuneful music. Yeah. I think we're getting away from tunes, and I think that's a bad thing, because I think the soul, you know, words are great, but the music is always the heart, yeah, of a musical.
It's another power.
Oui. And so you want to make sure that the music is attractive, but also if you're going to be passionate, what's wrong with being tuneful? So I think the music in Angelina is very tuneful, and maybe you will play something from Angelina.
That's the idea.
So okay, great. Well, there are a few things from Angelina that to mention. There's a duet for Angelina, and she lives in this apartment in New York City in the 1960s with her aunt, who she calls Zia. And Angelina is a woman in her 30s. She's married a man who is 20 years older than she, forced to marry a man 20 years older than she. And his son from a previous liaison shows up at the doorstep. He's 21 years old, he's handsome, and Angelina falls in love with him. This is Pedro and Hippolytus. So the first song is called The Same, and it's a song for Angelina and the aunt. And Angelina's life for the last 20 years has been a routine. They do the same thing every day. They have the same conversations. And I just thought it was interesting to set the world in which this woman lives and why a young man coming into her life would awaken something in her that she didn't think, that she thought was finished, was over. So the song The Same. There is also there's a thing called the beach scene, which is Angelina trying to teach the young man where they go to the beach. The husband has convinced them to go to the beach together, so they're away from the house. She tries to teach them Italian. It's an Italian family. And in talking to him about teaching him Italian, she reveals the sadness of her life. And she doesn't know she's going to do that, but it just happens. And you'll listen to the you'll hear the things from Angelina.
Let's listen this.
Lunedì, martedì, mercoledì, giovedì, venerdì, sabato, domenica,
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 venerdì.
Ci sono
i giorni,
ci sono
i giorni della settimana,
della settimana.
Now yesterday,
ieri ed oggi, today,
and what of tomorrow,
domani,
and how are you,
come sta,
thank you is,
Grazie, come sta?
Come va?
Sono molto lieto di fare la sua conoscenza,
Stefano.
Angelina.
The greetings. What do you say to a gentleman?
Buongiorno, signora.
No, that's what you say to the gentleman's wife. Signora, the man is signore.
Signore.
What do you say to a single girl?
Buongiorno, signorina.
And if she is also attractive and wise, with a wonderful figure and glowing eyes, what do you say?
Buongiorno, signorina.
Lunedì,
martedì,
mercoledì,
giovedì,
venerdì, sabato,
domenica.
Benissimo, ci sono i giorni,
ci sono i giorni, e come sta, come va, grazie, prego, vieni, e oggi, domani, buongiorno, sono molto lieto di fare la sua conoscenza, molto grazie, Angelina.
You learn fast.
I owe it all to my teacher.
Oh, I'd love to live here by the ocean.
Well, why don't you?
Try and get Victor to leave the neighborhood.
Why do you dress like you do?
What?
You look 10 years younger in a bathing suit.
Do you always say what you think?
Why not? Well, I meant it as a compliment. How old are you?
36.
And Victor?
Why all the questions? It happens every day. Young girl marries older man. It happens every day.
How did you two meet?
Zia raised me after my parents died. Victor went to her and said he was interested.
How old were you then?
17. I'd see him every day. Pass his restaurant, wave and say hello. What more was there to say? I'd no idea what he had in mind till Zia told me. You know what I did when she told me?
What?
I laughed so hard, I had a pain. It's true. When I got through laughing, Zia warned me not to be hasty, told me what a good man he was, how well off he was, begged me to go out with him just once. Why not? So, with St. Jude to guide us, and Zia there beside us, our date was planned for a luncheon and a ride. I died with girls, he had no talent. Still Zia found him gallant. Then she, not me, should have to be his bride. But when he smiled at me, I saw that he was gentle. His smile was warm and real. It made me feel alive. You just could not resent a man so sentimental. When he would smile, that day at best was hateful, but Zia said, be grateful. Don't fight with fate, just dating for a while. And though my heart was filled with doubt, I thought about when he would smile. But then, of course, you're familiar with the mysteries of romance.
Only what I've read.
No, oh, no secrets? No girls?
No.
I'll bet.
I never knew what to say to them. In English or Italian.
Of course. You're Victor's son. You even have his smile. He gave that smile to me, and suddenly November gave way to May and June, and very soon July. I'd sigh and shake my head, but Sia said, remember how he can smile. In my mind it was nothing special, just a date with a kindly older man. Then a moment begets another, and your life is no longer your own to plan. When your world doesn't save from hunger, every smile is replaced with a larger frown. Then you stare at yourself in the mirror, and you're wearing a satin wedding gown. Can that be you?
Martedì, mercoledì, giovedì, venerdì.
School is over! It's time we went home and got ready for the party.
There's another thing from Angelina. One of the things, because I knew I was working with the elements of Greek tragedy, I tried to create that within the show. So I had three neighborhood women. If you ever go down to Little Italy in New York, these women are always leaning out of their windows and they see everything in the neighborhood. They are so scary because they know everybody and they know everything. And I wanted to create the environment. So I had these three women, neighborhood women, who are always present, like the Fates. They're always sitting on stage and they're always commenting and watching what's going on. And I wrote a piece for them called Vidi na Croce, which means I saw the cross. It's a religious piece. But like any composer, I like to experiment with meter. And this is a piece that is written in 5/4. And it was also an attempt for me to experiment with choral writing. So it is an unusual piece because it's one of the first things you hear in the show. And as the piece gets more and more tragic, I kept changing the harmonies among these three women so that it became more and more taunting and scary. And as Angelina is basically losing her mind by the end of it, they were singing almost atonally the Vidina Croce. So, but I have on this, it is a chance for you to hear my experimentation with 5-4 and 3-4, and some tonalities, and just for me to experiment with choral writing. So, again, throwing myself in worlds where I don't live. There's another piece to mention, which is a musical that I'm working on called Skyline, which is about New York in the late 1940s. And it's about a guy who comes to New York who wants to be a jazz musician, who falls in love with a woman who came to New York wanted to be a dancer. And he's very naive. Everything bad happens to him in the city because he's very naive. And she is very cynical because she came to New York like him, and she now is just tough. And it was fun for me because since he wants to be a jazz musician, to have to write jazz, which is something that I never did before. And that's fun. That's fun to try to, again, work with a musical language, an idiom that you've never done before. So I loved writing the score for that because I got to do all this jazzy stuff. So she has a song called When You Gonna Learn, for example, that is very jazzy and playing with a lot of 13th chords, a lot of sharp nines and flatted fifths and sevenths. But it's experimenting with musical language that I wouldn't ordinarily write. And I love that. So that's why. So Angelina is the opera side. Skyline is the jazz side. And yet they're all me. And I want to say that. So that you still are saying what you want to say, both musically and lyrically. You're just finding a different palette to work with.
But one of your show is not, the music is not written by you. And sometimes you work with other composers.
I have sometimes just been asked to write the livre for the show and not the songs. Sometimes I write just the words. Sometimes I write the music, and it's wonderful for me to be able to experiment. There's an expression in America: I wear many hats. I don't know if it's similar in France or not. But the idea is that whatever you need me to do, I will do it. Yeah. So if you want music, if you want Perrault, I will do whatever. But it is always about trying to put yourself in a situation that is new and figuring out how you would make that your own. And I love that. I love that. So that's what I try to do with every project. And I'm hopeful. I'm hoping that someday my shows will come to France. I spend a lot of time in Paris, and I love coming there, and I love the people, and I love the music, and of course I love the food, and I would love to see how my work would be perceived in another country.
Yeah, and we will try to come that alive.
Oui.
Barry, tell me, when you are working with as a lyricist with another composer, do you drive him for the kind of music you want, the style or the musical phrases? Type of rhythm, of accents, and the number of bars you need for some stage entrance, some ballet.
That's a very good question. I think what's so funny is when I write a lyric first, I actually have a tune in my head, because I think you have to somehow think, if I was going to set this lyric, what would I do? And so you have a tune in your head, but I don't tell the composer what it is. I just give them the lyric and then say, do what you do. And then I hear what they do, and the first time I hear it, I always go like, well, that's nothing like what I thought. But then I look at it and I go, is it set properly? Because I always know what it's going to have to do in the show. And I will make suggestions. For example, And that's also true, by the way, as a lyricist. Joe Thalken, who wrote the music for Was, for example, he gave me a tune, and I as I was listening to
Was
it...
Was is one of your shows.
Right, oui. And he gave me a tune, and I thought, I can't set that. It's not long enough to do what it needs to do. So I said to him, I like the first two lines. I need two more lines here before we get to the next section, because I said, lyrically, I said, I don't have enough there to say what I need to say. So you'll have to give me more music. And then when I heard the middle section, I said, that is too short too. I said, you've got to develop it. And then I will need, I will tell him how many bars sometimes, or I will even think of the rhyme scheme. I know where a line has to land. And so I will think, I need an additional 8 measures. I need an additional 6. Whatever it is, I will hear something that but if he's on the right musical journey. If I go, yes, I like where you are. There was one song that was very hard for us to write, and he did a jazz waltz kind of a thing, and I went, it's not right. And I suggested a song that was very popular in America at a certain time, and I said, that's the feel. I said, there's a jauntiness. I said, that's the kind of feel that I'm looking for. And he did come up with something, but that was very helpful to him to hear what I was hearing in my head.
Yeah, you give a reference.
Yeah. And then he was able to, whether he knew the song or not, he knew what I meant in terms of the feeling. And then he was able to come up with something. But that is, it's very good for another composer to work with somebody who writes music, because there's an understanding of what music does that does not have to be explained. And that, so there's shorthand. Do you know what I mean? Things happen quickly because you understand. There's an understanding, and then sometimes a composer will surprise you. I wrote a lyric that I knew was going to be about 8 minutes or 10 minutes of stage time in Was, but I knew what had to happen, and I just wrote the whole thing, and I gave it to Joe, for example, and I just said, see what you do. And of course, it was fascinating to see what he came up with, because he saw what had to happen in terms of the 8 to 10 minutes of stage time, and that was very helpful to him. And of course, he came up with something that was so different from what I originally thought, but he saw what I was trying to do. But that's very rare that I would write that long a sequence without give and take. Yeah,
in that case, how do you choose your composer?
Is it
friendship or
no? You know, it's not friendship. It's about, I think, whenever you are looking to write with somebody, you have to see the big picture the same. So, you know, and this is my advice to anybody who wants to write with somebody: sit down, have a cup of cafe, sit and talk, and say, what do you like? What movies do you like? What books do you like? What things make you angry? What things inspire you? Whatever that is, find out if you agree on the big picture. Because you can disagree on the little things. The little things are okay. That's what makes it interesting. But if you don't see the big picture the same, you will be terrible collaborators. I want you to know. You will never live in the same world. And I will also tell you, you do not have to be good friends. This is a misconception. You know, Gilbert and Sullivan hated each other, but they had great respect for each other as writers. And I think that is what it's about. It's about seeing the world. You have to see the world the same, and then you can write together. But if you do not, that's never going to change. And, you know, your work will reflect it. You will not be in the same world. So anybody who wants to write, make sure, before I wrote with Joe, we did not know each other, and we sat and had 3 or 4 times of just sitting and talking about what we liked and what we didn't like, and we knew we existed in the same sphere. Very important. I can't stress that enough. And I think more shows don't work because of that.
I guess I should be grateful to Professor Griffin for suggesting you phone me. I'd have flunked that last test without you. You would have done fine, Jonathan. Stop being so insecure. It's instilling more confidence. And you, my tutor, what do you need?
Pass the bar exam?
No problem. You're a genius. Not a moron like yours truly.
Jonathan, you are not dumb. Especially for an actor.
Thanks. Why does a bright kid like you hang around with somebody like me?
I'm Jewish. We're always in need of afflictions.
Touché. Well, mea culpa, but I don't think of you as an affliction at all.
No.
On the contrary, I'll solemnly swear on a staff of Anton Chekhov that in the hot, arid sands of UCLA, you are a veritable oasis. I was feeling down and out, didn't know what life was all about. A loner in this desert, without a map, every hope I had was gone. Seems my dream account was all.
Jonathan, it's not a joke. Honestly, she worries when I don't come home at night. So shoot me, I'm a considerate son. Does that change anything? Hell, we're getting bagels.
So Barry, to end this kind interview, I love to have your look on the actual Broadway, the shows, and what is going on Times Square.
We're in a strange time, Christoph, because the theater is very healthy, Broadway is doing very well, but the quality is very. Mezza. It's some things better than others. I do think we're in a transition period. I think we've got to get back to serious composition because the men who we all loved and women who we all loved who wrote in the golden age of Broadway were all very serious about their work and their craft. And I think we've got to somehow find a way to get back to that because I think that's healthy for the theater. I think pop music and Broadway do not mix. And you know, we also have so many shows where they take a catalog of a pop writer and they build a show around them. And there are so many of these. And
like TV shows,
and except for Mamma Mia and Jersey Boys,
and maybe Xanadu,
most of them are not successful, and because the songs are not theatrical. You know what I was talking about writing for character. These songs were not written for characters, so they don't really.
That's very interesting stuff for French people because. Of course, they don't have this characterization of theater song because of tradition, lost tradition, etc. And a theater song is a kind of specific,
very
song,
specific. You have to feel that you are that something is accomplished in the singing of the song that would not be accomplished if the song was not sung. This is very important. You have to feel that you've gone somewhere by the end of the number. And with songs that were not written for the theater, there's nothing to accomplish by the singing of the song because the song isn't going to take you anywhere. It will be a divertissement. Yeah. It will be a dance or
obvious in the show I saw yesterday, which is Les Galibans. Based upon the movie. Which got just 4 or 5 good songs and a lot of dance numbers and pop songs.
Very well done, but not very interesting.
In a theater way.
And it, what's fascinating, when you told me that Cabaret, for example, that this production at the Folies Bergère is so successful, and those are great theater songs. And I think that they speak to every country. I think that a great theater writing is... I don't think it's an accident that shows like My Fair Lady and West Side Story are now being done in opera houses around the world because it's serious writing. Even though it seems light and it seems, just very frivolous and it was written by men who really took their craft seriously. And My Fair Lady is every bit as crafted as Tosca. It's and as seriously thought through, and therefore it's very important that we understand we've got to somehow get back, because we're losing that. We're losing that tradition, and I think it's so valuable. It's like, it's part of our heritage, and I don't want to see that go away.
You've got a show like Curtains, which remains a Broadway show.
It's a Broadway show, a musical comedy musical, and written by great men of the theater. And so, but one of them has now left us, has passed away, and the next generation has to understand that they are part of a continuum, part of a great tradition. And you have to find your own way, but you must not ignore the past. You know, one of the things that I think is very important when we talk about traditions, which is why I brought up Offenbach and Hervé and all of this, which is that these men created something that we then took, and Jerome Kern, for example. Jerome Kern was a great American composer, but his music was all based on Leo Fal, who was a great German composer. He loved Leo Fal, and he found his own way by imitating him and then finding his own way. I think you must not ignore the past. I think we can look at the past and go, well, that was fine for its time, but there's something about tradition that is worth holding on to and preserving and then taking to the next level. I find now, Christoph, many writers want to go from A to Z without going to base A. They don't want to do the steps.
And maybe some serious Broadway composer.
Oh, yeah.
Are just dreaming to be and to become new Zondines.
Oui.
And
oui,
they
oui.
Are copying the master's play.
But the truth of the matter is most of them don't really understand what he does. They hear all these 16th notes, but they don't know why he writes them. He's the only one who knows why he writes them. So they want to do that, but he is maligned because he's very tuneful, but people do not, the young composers don't hear the tunes. They only hear the figures. They only hear
the chords.
And the chords, but they don't hear the passionate tunefulness underneath. And that's the thing that is special about him, is he's a very tuneful writer. And that's why I think it's very important that people, they can take all of that, but they have to find out what is the melodic inspiration. There's something about a wonderful melody that still lifts the heart. But it still does. Oui.
Yeah. Some young Broadway composer like David Yazbek got that quality.
He will tell you.
Sorry, he's a composer for
Full Monty
and
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Oui. And he said that he was totally influenced by Frank Lesser for the score of Guys and Dolls. He said he grew up hearing Guys and Dolls, and when he was approached to write for the theater, he said that's what he had in his head. And if you know that, and you listen to those scores, you will hear how the sense of patois, the sense of attitude, the sense of comedy is all built out of that Guys and Dolls score. But that's great to know, because why not, if you're going to take an example, take from a great one,
yes.
And I think that's why his writing is successful, is that he has a very specific idea of what the attitude is that he brings to the musical theater. But I think some of these other writers do not have that, or even are resentful of the musical
theater. Maybe the authors of Avenue Q, which is a great show.
Great musical comedy score. And again, these are guys who very much love tradition.
Yeah, they're very smart.
And very smart. It's good to be smart. but they are clearly fans of musical comedy. If you talk to them, they are. They're fans of, and they know their stuff. Whereas somebody like Duncan Sheik, who writes nice tunes for Spring Awakening, but is not a theater man. He's not a theater man. He doesn't really understand how to write for character.
And the show isn't a theater show.
And it's not a theater show. And this is why I think they're wrong about thinking that these people, this score will bring new people to the theater. It won't. It won't. It will work for this particular show, but the audience that goes to that is not then going to go see the next David Yazbek show. They're not going to. So it's a wrong way of thinking. He's not a theater runner. So we.
Dear Barry, I thank you very much for this interview and this moment.
Mon plaisir.
this moment with you, and we will leave Broadway for now with one of your songs.
And for your French listeners, excuse my français, please.
Oh. Your French is as good as my English is. And so we will hear. Which one, Barry?
I actually think we should do something very, very romantic. I think why don't we go out on To Be Wanted and Everyone Needs Someone, just to show a romantic spirit. These were two songs that were written for two projects. One was written for Angelina, actually, and the other was written for Skyline. And we put them together into a romantic duet. And I think that would be a nice thing to close the show.
Let's go, Barry. And thank you.
Yes.
Just being alone. Will the emptiness I've lived with disappear when a smiling face says all you want is here? I was hoping I would find you. Are you frightened? Me too. All this searching for a new life, will it end here with you? If it's only for a moment, and in 3 weeks I go, it's the feeling I've been waiting all my life to know.
Every knight in armor seeks a lady fair. Everyone needs someone to care. Lonely hearts keep waiting, but who can be blamed? We're searching a crowd for what makes us proud and a little ashamed. It's the kind of madness but not knowing just who. Still everyone needs someone. I thought by now you knew, and that includes a someone like you.
The passion never slows in the
to be wanted. It's the feeling that I've longed to.